Welcome to The Current, a podcast produced by We Stand for Energy. We Stand for Energy is a community that supports a reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy future for everyone. It is a project of EEI, Edison Electric Institute, the National Trade Association representing U.S. investor-owned electric companies. My name is Brad Viator, Executive Director of External Affairs at EEI, and I'm your host. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of being joined by Sandy Safra, who's a partner at K&L Gates. She co-leads the oil, gas, and resources practice. But the reason I'm talking to her is because she just launched a hydrogen practice at K&L. And I don't know about how it's working for you guys, but I'm hearing a ton about hydrogen in the utility space. And so we thought we'd have Sandy on to tell us a little bit more about it. And in addition to leading that practice, she also hosts a podcast called Hydrogen Rising, which is a cool and ominous sort of title. So, Sandy, thanks so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Brad. It's really a pleasure to be a guest here on The Current, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you all about hydrogen. I can tell you that a year ago, I really did not know a lot about hydrogen myself, and in fact, one of my colleagues and I were hosting a German delegation in our office, and we were talking to them about issues related to liquefied natural gas or LNG. And one of the folks in the delegation asked us how much hydrogen we blend in our gas pipelines. And my colleague and I, who've worked together for over a decade, looked at each other across the room and exchanged that look that's, I don't know what he's talking about, do you? And since then, we've seen the news pick up, so we decided to dig in and realize that there really is a lot of promise here.
Let me start it this way. In the utility space, both electric and gas, why on earth should we care about hydrogen and why is everybody talking about it? Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there are a number of different areas in which hydrogen can be extremely beneficial in our energy mix. And I think I'll start with those. So the first place that I think will be of the most interest or significant interest to the folks who are listening to this podcast and thinking about it from the utility perspective is really with respect to storage for renewable energy resources. And a little bit more specifically, without getting too deep into the weeds, you can basically produce hydrogen from renewable sources like wind and solar, and you can store that hydrogen as a molecule in storage the same way you might store natural gas. And then you can effectively reproduce electricity from that hydrogen later. So given the intermittency issues with renewable energy, hydrogen can be a really valuable component of a renewable portfolio. Another couple ways in which hydrogen can be used. It is possible to use hydrogen as a replacement for natural gas, to combust hydrogen for power generation. It's not really super common in the United States. I'm aware of a couple of generation projects that are looking to use small amounts of hydrogen at the moment, but there's one project in Ohio, for example, that based on customer demand is looking to move towards 100% hydrogen as its feedstock for combustion in about 10 years. And they're working with GE to do that. And so I think that's on the horizon and it's definitely a potential. And then I think for utility companies, I think you could also see customer demand for hydrogen just on its own. Just for example, there's discussion about using hydrogen as a replacement for coke in steel manufacturing. So you could start to see industrials increasing their current demand for hydrogen. And actually, one thing I should mention in this vein, Brad, is hydrogen, even though we're all talking about it now in a much more significant way, hydrogen has actually been used in the United States for about 80 years, and it's mainly been used in petroleum refining and in agricultural fertilizer. So we're not necessarily talking about an entirely new industry, but really what we're talking about is the deployment of an existing industry into new spaces.
Fascinating. All right. Well, a couple of things that you said that I'm going to pull threads on. You talked a little bit about fuel cells and some of the application of hydrogen and fuel cells and that technology there. Can you expand on that a little bit and talk about the ways that hydrogen's being utilized in that manner?
Yeah, absolutely. The fuel cell application is really interesting. So I know a lot of folks will be very familiar with the concept of battery electric vehicles and the ability to use hydrogen fuel cells for some kinds of over-the-road vehicles. It's something that's being thought of as a really interesting piece of the puzzle in reducing our overall emissions profile. And just to get a little bit more granular on that, when you think about converting municipal bus fleets or a large fleet of heavy-duty or medium-duty over-the-road vehicles to battery electric vehicles, you have to think about the fueling time, and it can be pretty significant. And so that can mean that the footprint for the bus station, for example, might have to be quite large if you have a pretty long fueling time. The advantage that hydrogen fuel cells have is the fueling time is almost, as my understanding, is almost equivalent to going to a gas station and filling up with petroleum or diesel. So it's pretty quick relative to BEVs. And so it really increases the flexibility and the opportunity for conversion for fleet type vehicles to hydrogen or to an electric vehicle. And when you use a fuel cell electric vehicle, effectively what comes out of the tailpipe is oxygen and maybe a little bit of water. So it's very clean burning. But then the applications really almost go to the sky's the limit from there, because you could use hydrogen fuel cells for maritime applications. So I know obviously a number of folks in the maritime space have needed to look at and make modifications to comply with the IMO 2020 standards. We had a conversation this morning actually with a company that's thinking about aerospace applications. There are applications for small size aircraft and eventually passenger aircraft. So in the not too distant future, we could all be boarding flights where the airplane is actually fueled by hydrogen, which could be quite cool. And the applications really go on from there. Anywhere that you might be able to use electricity, you could plug in a hydrogen fuel cell, including as backup power for data centers, for example.
Fascinating. Look, I think it's great in this time where everybody seems to be focused on carbon reduction to hear about what other industries are thinking about and some of the things that are being utilized. And I think one thing that goes with that is one of the ways I hear about hydrogen being utilized, which is as a resource that is blended with natural gas or blended with petroleum to reduce the carbon impact that those resources provide. And also at the same time, you could use this hydrogen to distribute through existing pipelines as a part of this blend. So we don't have to go build a boatload of new infrastructure to create a new industry. We're just utilizing existing infrastructure and being smart about what we have. Can you talk a little bit about the hydrogen being blended with more traditional fuels like natural gas and petroleum and how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. You're hitting right in my sweet spot here. So I'll try not to nerd out too much, although it's very tempting. So in terms of blending, I think when you look at combustion, I think blends are probably where we most likely are in the very near term. And I'm thinking particularly about for power generation. From what I understand, we're not yet at a point where we've got the technology nailed down to do 100% hydrogen combustion for power generation. So my understanding is that it would be a blend of hydrogen and natural gas. But when you get to the pipelines, it's definitely a bit of an interesting question. Hydrogen is a gas like natural gas, but it has a different composition than natural gas does. And hydrogen reacts differently, for example, with steel and can cause steel embrittlement. So there has to be some consideration for what the material is that the existing pipeline is made out of. And from an engineering and safety perspective, there has to then be some thought given to how much hydrogen would be appropriate to push through that pipeline. Hydrogen is also the smallest molecule on the periodic table, so it is absolutely smaller than methane. And areas where you have methane leakage, you could, for example, also see hydrogen leakage. But there are also regulatory considerations. And some folks may remember the gas quality proceedings at FERC in the early 2000s that were really related to the imports of natural gas or LNG from other countries. And those were proceedings where multiple stakeholders participated, and they took, you know, quite a while, and there were very in-depth conversations, and ultimately some decisions were made about how the gas quality provisions should be set for U.S. pipelines. And I think probably have to go through a similar exercise when you start talking about adding hydrogen into the natural gas stream for interstate pipelines. What's interesting also, just thinking about using new pipes, if you wanted to build a new fully dedicated hydrogen pipeline, is that hydrogen, from our read, does not fall within the scope of FERC's jurisdiction under the Natural Gas Act. And so the way that those pipelines very likely would be permitted would be through a process that's very similar to the way in which interstate oil pipelines are permitted. There is no agency for interstate oil pipelines that has oversight from end to end of the pipe. Instead, you've got the Army Corps that, of course, has to be involved in the process for a number of different reasons, and other federal agencies that have permits to issue. But the pipeline project developer has to actually obtain certificates of public convenience and necessity from each state that the pipeline passes through, which is very different from natural gas pipelines. And so that process can be somewhat cumbersome and time-consuming. And so I think there are, you know, real advantages if we can find a way to use existing infrastructure as opposed to trying to build new pipes. Of course, we could also look for regulatory reform or statutory reform.
If we think about sort of future-proofing some of the investments that we're making right now, right? There are a couple of folks that are trying to build some natural gas pipelines as we speak. What are the types of things those developers should be thinking about if these ultimately may become assets that would deliver hydrogen blends now and maybe pure hydrogen in the future? Are there things we should be considering to future-proof these assets a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. The first thing I would think of is really the materials and taking some time to talk to folks in the hydrogen industry about, you know, what kinds of materials are most appropriate and seeing if there's a way to marry those up with what works for natural gas pipelines. I think also my understanding is that more compression would be needed to move hydrogen on the pipes because the molecule is smaller. So thinking about the size of your compressor stations, perhaps where they're located, and also maybe just getting a better understanding of what customers along the pipeline route might be thinking of in terms of their energy mix going forward.
All right, so what's next? What do we need to do? Like, how do we need to make this hydrogen reality, or this hydrogen sort of possibility a reality? I'm guessing we need money, and so we got to figure out where to get it, and we need to spend money on research. You talked about regulatory certainty. How do we get there as you think about the step-by-step to creating a hydrogen future?
I think the first step is really incentivizing demand for hydrogen so that you got the demand built up. But talking to folks in the industry, I've asked the question, chicken or the egg, which comes first? Do we have supply come first or do we have demand come first? And the response I keep getting is it's got to be a little bit of a lockstep approach where each increment, you have a little bit of supply and a little bit of demand, and we move up and we move up and we move up. So I think that's one step of the puzzle. I think technology is going to be another step, and R&D dollars from the government. The Department of Energy has already done some really great grant programs for hydrogen technology, and I think that needs to continue. So some of the things are making the fuel cells or the technology that goes into vehicles lighter. I think government dollars directed towards carbon capture and storage technology, which is really critical when you look at the production pathway for hydrogen that involves natural gas. So using steam methane reformation to produce natural gas, you can produce what's called blue hydrogen, but it's still physically the same color hydrogen. If you attach carbon capture and sequestration technology to that production pathway. And then I think investing dollars and resources in storage technology so that we've got storage that's on par with what we have for other resources in our industry. Because I think unless you have those pieces of the puzzle, it's very hard to really build meaningful demand.
We've got a new presidential administration coming in, and the new president is the former vice president of an administration that was very interested in behavioral economics. Maybe there's some synergies there about creating demand. Are you thinking about tax policy as it relates to just creating these incentives? And if so, what are we talking about here? Like, how would those tax credits work?
The current renewable tax credits are actually written broadly enough so that they could be construed to capture hydrogen and hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicles. I think continuation, at least, of tax credits that are written broadly, that would be very helpful. And I guess one other thing, just kind of on the Biden administration outside of tax credits, that I'll just add is I think signing onto the Paris Agreement could be a pretty significant boon for hydrogen. It's definitely been a driver for other countries as they've announced the allocation of government dollars towards hydrogen development.
All right. This is fascinating. Thank you for digging in a little bit and making me smarter on hydrogen. And also thank you for taking some time to speak directly to the audience. I really appreciate your time and expertise. We hope you found this to be an informative discussion, and we look forward to bringing you additional expert insights on energy policy. To learn more about EEI and the electric power industry, visit www.eei.org. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts by searching for The Current and We Stand for Energy.